We'll call the Tribal and State Relations Committee to order and have the roll taken, please.
Representative Johnson?
Here.
Nelson?
Here.
Trotter?
Here.
Senators Larson? Elke?
Aye.
Warner? Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum. Oh, excuse me, I didn't get to the tribal. Scott Davis?
Here.
Chairman Archambault?
Stephen Sandberg, sitting in for Chairman Archambault.
Thank you. Chairman Hall? Chairman McLeod?
Here.
Chairman Pearson?
Here.
And Chairman Shepherd? Okay, Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you. And do we have consideration of minutes from our last meeting?
Move to approve.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
10 o'clock presentation here then, and we have a concurrent resolution to be presented to us this morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the materials, you should have a resolution. It's 15.3031, 3031.01,000. And this is a resolution that would call for legislative management study to look at some collaboration between the tribes and the state in providing services for tribal youth in the state who are adjudicated in tribal courts. This is in response to the testimony from Judge Fowdy and others at the last meeting or the last two meetings on the need for some increased services for tribal youth who are coming out of the tribal courts and to work, to be able to work with the State Division of Juvenile Services and Department of Corrections and the juvenile court in the state system. And this would, the process for this resolution would be that if it would be approved by this committee and passed by the Legislative Assembly, it would become one of the studies that the legislative management would consider for study during the next session. It would, you know, be subject to the prioritization process that goes through, but it would provide for a study.
Thank you. One thing that brought our attention after this resolution's put together is on line two, and then back on line 19, and they talk about being between the tribes and the state, and we probably should have been added in there between the, or among the tribes and the state and the federal government. And if someone would like to make a motion or correction to that effect, what your thoughts are on that? Representative Trotter?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move to add in federal government, between the tribes, the state government and the federal government in providing services.
Okay, that'd be on line two and line 19 then?
Yes.
I'll work on the wording.
And council will work on the wording to get it proper there. Any other thoughts on the resolution here? Does anybody have any additions or corrections or thoughts on it you'd like to share? Mr. Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of committee. I think just to recap about what the study is focusing on is really about how can tribal youth qualify for state services. You know, it's really the focus of what Judge Fowdy, I think, is, from my opinion, what he's been after. You know, there's been kind of a very huge gap between when the child is in a tribal court system versus state court system. You know, that there is a lot of opportunity, I guess, for state resources that he sees within both of those court systems. So I think the study's a good thing, and hopefully I'm certainly will be involved in this as well if it does pass. Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Trotter?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And again, it just came to light, and I've probably been kept in the dark on some things, a lot of things, I think, in my life, but a couple of weeks ago, I attended a school classroom situation because we were made aware of things that go on in the classrooms. And I was not aware of not just misconduct, but problem in the schools. And I asked the school if it was at Grafton. I said, are you the only ones in the state like this? They said, practically every school in North Dakota has this problem where kids will get into tantrums and throw chairs and do tribal schools, grade schools, same problems? Where there's problem children, and then like at Grafton, there was a half dozen of them that had some real, they called them mental issues, and they were things that kids don't grow out of. They were very severe. So, Mr. Chairman McLeod?
Thank you, Chairman. To answer Representative Trottier, 15 years as a school board member, 14 years as a school board president, I can speak on Trudeau Mon's behalf. It's not really a statewide problem. It's not really a reservation problem. Our elementary schools, it's a very good school. Our students are still young. They don't throw those type of tantrums. I don't know, throw it back at you. Is there white people, disgruntled drivers out there? Probably. Probably more than Native Americans. Middle school, reservations are so unique to the rest of how things operate. I'm sure Chairman Pearson could probably relate to that also. I didn't see that many tantrums happening within our school system where I was in a school board president or a school board member. Maybe 0.001% of every student body rate. Regardless of what school, yes, something does happen. But as far as widespread throughout the state, I think every school has them, but not to that level. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In response, I did not understand it, and then I went home because I said, I don't think this is happening in our school at Northwood. And the Northwood teacher said we have the very same thing going on here. In most classrooms, we have a teacher and two aides to take care of this. And it just shocked me. I was not aware of any of this. I think back to when I was in school, and we would never see it. And Grafton responded that a lot of the kids were from either single-parent families or from probably the mother was into drugs or alcohol when she was pregnant and that kind of thing. And they said it's going on all over the state. They said the big schools, Fargo and Bismarck, and it just shocked me. And I was kind of hoping you would say, no, we don't have any of that going on, and maybe you're just normal like all schools. But it was a shocker to me that, and the one gentleman with us that was on the tour with us, he had two adopted children. And the counselor told him, do not grab and hold on to him. If you're at home, take and put him in his bedroom, hold on to the door and don't let him open it. He said, we held the door and all of a sudden we heard a chair going through the window. I mean, it was that severe. So, just an eye-opener for me.
Mr. Chairman, again, thank you. My oldest granddaughter, she's 14. She attended school in Tullamore from Head Start through 8th grade. This year she's attending school in Rolla, Senator Nelson's turf. The only reason she's attending school in Rolla is it's not so much the tantrums or anything, it's the learning cycle as she described it. I'm I don't wish to deal with the eagles, the bullying, the texting, the things of that nature. I'm a freshman in high school now, and it's time I get an education, was her response. As far as, you know, I can honestly say in Rolla, this don't happen. She kind of calls it Pleasantville.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other comments on the resolution? Do I have a motion?
Or go ahead, take a voice.
Do we vote on the motion to amend it? Or we can do that by voice?
We need a voice vote on amending the amendment, so all those in favor to the amendments they put on the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? They carried. Now we do have the amendment to the resolution. Representative Trottier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to accept and file as written.
Second.
Second.
All those in favor of this moving this resolution, we can do this on a voice vote, can't we?
This one we need a roll call.
We do need a roll call vote? Okay, we'll take a roll call vote on this.
Representative Johnson?
Yes.
Nelson?
Aye.
Trottier?
Yes.
Senator Elke?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, the motion carries.
Okay, thank you. On our 10:30 agenda is this tribal state tax agreements. Mr. Davis?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I got notice here from Mark Fox, tax director, that he could not make it this morning due to other commitments, and I think we all know he's campaigning too, so I'm sure he's a busy guy, but said he would really apologizes, and we'll definitely follow up after, and probably see everybody during session as well too, so that's the message.
Do we have somebody from Standing Rock that's going to give the presentation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Stephen Sittingbear, External Affairs Director for Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. Something that's going to be coming forward this coming session, Standing Rock would like to do a sales and use tax agreement with the state of North Dakota. We've been working on this for about a year and a half, kind of going back and forth between the different offices here at the state, trying to find out who has the authority to enter into these negotiations and these contracts. We had an opinion from the AG's office, basically saying it has to be a legislative action. So we're going to go through that process, and we hope we can get some support behind it.
Legislative Council.
Legislative Council gave that opinion. So we'll bring that forward. Also, the oil and gas tax agreement that Fort Berthold had received last session. Right now, Standing Rock is pretty slow. There's not a whole lot of outlook as far as oil and gas development, but we do know we have a lot of natural gas. So what we're going to be coming for is we're asking for the same agreement. I believe, is there another tribe that was going after it as well? Total Mountain's going for it as well. So I just want to put that on the table. I'll let everybody know that we are going to be coming forward, and we'll give more testimony then. But thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sittingbear. Is there any questions for any committee for Representative Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, this is an area I've wondered about a bit. You know, we see this thing with agreements between the state and such, and you know, interesting the opinion they got, because it seems to me that we do kind of have to legislatively give the go-ahead to do it, and yet It seems to me we almost at some point need to give some general authority for administrative agencies to negotiate some of these things, and I realize we can't delegate that they do spending or something like that, but it seems to me that we're kind of needlessly, in some cases, slowing this process down by not having a little bit of foundation in place. So just because something goes through negotiation, we don't necessarily have to approve it, everything that comes along, but we don't even really have the, you know, it's like here now they want to do a sales and tax use agreement. There's really no benefit from them not being able to negotiate something with the tax department and stuff and come up with it, even if it gets later approved by the legislature. It's like now we'll have one session where we talk about getting approval, basically, and then maybe the next session we'll do it. It seems to me that we really probably kind of need some general authority for agencies to deal with these, the tribes as government to government, and there's areas of law enforcement, and I know sometimes there's local agreements. I'm not even really sure if, when it comes down to it, those local agreements are legal. It seems to me to be a general area of deficiency that the state really hasn't worked through either. That, I don't know, maybe we need to study that too, but it just seems to me that we're really not where we should be on these agreements. That's, I guess, just a comment all I have.
Tax department's on the way down, so
they
may have some comments on that.
Mr. Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think just to add on to a comment to Representative Nelson is that, you know, I always look back at the many MOUs, agreements, accords, compacts we have between the state and tribe, whether it's gaming, child welfare, taxation, on and on. I think everyone is unique. Some are kind of one size fits all. But when I look at, see the oil and gas tax that we have with MHA now, MHA Nation, you know, in hindsight, that was really new and uncharted territory between the state and tribe, you know, given the fact that, you know, oil and gas, especially oil, in this case, was very new to all of us. So, and there was never a tax structure on the reservation for oil and gas. So we had to help them create one. And so that's where we're at today. Now that's kind of how I view this, some of the sales and use tax as well. It's uncharted territory. It's been talked about, but I think when in our discussions, you know, when we go down the, whether it's my department, tax department, or legislative council, the governor's office, we all, it's not in our statute, it's not clearly written in our century code. So obviously we come back to you folks as legislators saying this is probably a legislative fix. So again, I really view the sales and use as uncharted territory. I think, it's really worth pursuing down, you know, as we did with the oil and gas tax. And then we just see where the tribes and the state go between, you know, during the session. So that's kind of my comment on that. But I think it would, you know, I've been asked this too about the overall, how many tax agreements, how many accords do you have, you know, one size fits all. Sometimes I look at that differently because tribes are unique. You know, I use the example of a gaming compact. You know, we agreed to, as a state, to allow riverboat vessel gaming. And there the tribes came together, and it was only MHA that wanted it. Granted, Standrock has a river and Spear Lake has a lake, but they chose not to pursue riverboat or vessel gaming. So again, those are things that are different, unique between each tribe too. So things that we should probably consider as a state. Mr. Chairman, thank you.
The folks in the tax department here, Mr. Fox is unable to be here today, and Mr. Sitting Bull shared some of the things that they'd like to see from 48. So
Sitting Bull.
Sitting there.
I'm not that famous yet.
And that's no bull.
That's no bull. Sitting there, I apologize. If someone wants to, any comments or hard to come in and know what was being said and such, but if you're here and have comments, we'd be glad to take them.
Mr. Chairman, for the taxi board, I just kind of recapped our process of going down the sales and use tax, which is really unclear in our statute, our century code, that, you know, we went through the process quite a bit this past summer, and ultimately, I think we all agreed, all three parties, tribe, state, and departments all agree that this is really a legislative fix, and that's kind of where we're at today, Mr. Chairman, so.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
I wouldn't mind to hear from the tax department a little bit. I know I see they're reticent about jumping up here, but I think it's important for us to understand the flexibility that the state does have in negotiating agreements with the tribe and other entities. I know, for instance, in the sales tax for fuels on reservations, they do have, there is some flexibility there in the various agreements, and so the legislature doesn't have to sit down with each tribe and make a rule. You know, they have, we give them the broad parameters, and it, you know, was, you know, I don't know if that's true for some of these other areas of taxation on reservations. The other thing that's a little bit complicating about this whole issue, I think, is every reservation is a little bit different. They have a different constitution, and they, you know, it isn't a one-size-fits-all. So, you know, perhaps, Dan, if you want to address some of this, I'd appreciate it. I don't know if anyone else really cares, but I do.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, distinguished visitors. For the record, I'm Dan Rouse. I'm legal counsel to the State Tax Commissioner's Office, have been for 17 years now, and one of my main portfolios, which I'm proud of, is to be the representative of the tax department with the various tribal nations in the state. And again, it's been my pleasure to work with each tribe. And Senator Elkin, your question and your comments are very spot on, as we say in the military, because it's been interesting from the fact that each tribe brings its own uniqueness to the table, and they have their own unique challenges and needs. And one of the ways that they've discovered and the ability to address some of those needs, one of the cold hard realities, of course, of life is things cost money. And if there are legitimate, lawful ways for the state and the various tribal governments to cooperatively work to address those needs and respect each other's jurisdiction and sovereignty, we've been very open and welcoming of those opportunities. And as Scott has pointed out, we've done so with most of the tribes here in the state on a number of topics. Just by way of a quick reminder, and along the lines of your questions or your comments, Senator Elke, with Standing Rock Tribe, we have in the reservation, we have two different agreements. And in fact, we go back the longest, if you will, with Standing Rock, back to 1993 when we began with a cigarette and tobacco products tax agreement. And that's worked very well. And let me sidestep for a moment. One of the requirements that the governor's office has asked that we impose on any agreement that we enter into is that the tribe's code or their ordinance be substantially similar to the state's tax laws. And the reason for that is twofold. One, there's no real question or hiccup when someone comes onto a reservation and makes a transaction that would be subject to tax, whether it be state tax or tribal tax. There's no question about the tax, the methodology, the amount. It's the same. It's supposed to be a blind transaction, if you will. And the other reason for that is one of the other requirements that the governor's office has, the previous governor and the present governor imposed on these agreements was that our office administer the taxes as an agent for the tribal governments. And that's been a very successful relationship, again, as far back as 1993 when we began that relationship with Standing Rock. We also have an agreement with Standing Rock for motor vehicle fuels and special fuels, and that's been in place since 1999. And I'll digress one more time here, if I may, Mr. Chairman. Right now, and Scott may have mentioned this, excuse me, we are in the final stages, and I believe this committee is aware of that, of updating both of those agreements. There have been a substantial number of changes in both the cigarettes and the fuels tax areas of law since, you can imagine, since 1993 and 1999, and the tribal government and the state determined that it was in everyone's best interests to update the ordinances to be more in harmony with the state's tax laws, substantial similarity. And then we are also looking at the census data for the changes there, because there has been a change in the census and the proportion of population that we're able to take into consideration with those agreements. With Spirit Lake, back in 2006, we were successful in, under your chairship, we were successful in getting a motor vehicle and special fuels tax agreement, and that's worked swimmingly as far as I can tell. Again, our office administers it. We collect a small 1% administrative fee. We have a sign up there that says taxes are us, and we try to do it as efficiently and as expeditiously as we can, and that fee also was a requirement of the governor's office. Three affiliated, we have a motor vehicle fuels and special fuels agreement that's been in place since 2007, and of course everyone knows about the oil and gas gross production and extraction tax agreement, which really isn't with the tax department, it's of course with the state after the blessing of the legislature. And with Turtle Mountain and Chippewa, we do have a motor vehicle fuel and special fuels tax agreement that we've had since, I believe, September of 2010, Mr. Chairman. So it's, and that, again, has worked out very well for us. As you all may know, there's a portion of the Century Code that authorizes state agencies to enter into agreements directly with the various tribes for activities or functions that the state agency ordinarily would be responsible for undertaking itself. Taxation is one of those areas that's been understood and agreed to that is something where we can enter into those agreements, and I've just mentioned where we're at with respect to the tax collection agreements. There's another section in that same chapter of the Century Code, however, that says that before we, the agency, can engage in that activity on behalf of the tribe or as the agent of the tribe, the respective tribal government, that agreement has to have the blessing of the governor's office. And so the governor is given some latitude to provide some structure or overall parameters within which those agreements can operate. And as I said, one of them is that the agreement has to be, the collection and administration of the taxes has to be done by the tax department for a small fee. The tribal government's ordinances have to be substantially similar to the state's tax laws, which is what prompted Standing Rock and the state to come to the table recently. And the fourth is that the revenue has to be proportionately distributed based upon the representative population on the reservation of enrolled members versus non-enrolled. And just to give you an example, under the present agreements with Standing Rock, we are at a the revenue allocation, or the sharing, if you will, is 75% to the tribe, 25% to the state. With Spirit Lake, it's 76% to the tribe, 24% to the state. And with respect to the motor vehicle fuels and special fuels tax agreement that the tax department is in with three affiliated, it's 70% to the tribe, 30% to the state. And finally, with Standing Rock, excuse me, Turtle Mountain, because of the condensed area that is at play, as well as the condensed and concentrated population, the revenue allocation is 96% to the tribe, 4% to the state. Now, it's an allocation because it's not a revenue sharing. Revenue sharing is not allowed, and that's one of the problems we're having with the broader taxes, such as sales tax and the like, is that that is on a much broader scale. And perhaps we can elaborate on that with some memoranda to you all if you desire, but just for the sake of discussion here, with a more concentrated tax type such as fuels tax or special fuels tax, our office and the legislative council through Mr. Walstead, at the request of Representative Schmidt, I believe, engaged on a legal research project, and we came to the conclusion that the broader taxes such as sales tax are more like the oil and gas production and extraction taxes, because they're on a broader scale, that it is more of a decision that ought to have, at a minimum, legislative input. And so that's where, and Mr. Davis alluded to that before we came in, I understand, that we have decided to step back from going that far so as not to, one, overstep our bounds of authority, two, to respect the fact that the legislature sets the laws and we have to abide by those, and three, to make sure that any agreement that we enter into is something that we can, in fact, administer on behalf of the tribes. And so that is why we have stepped back from that. But back to my revenue allocation point, I've described it, and for some of you that have known me for years, I apologize if this sounds like a broken record, but how we describe it is this, and my wife is from Partial, so I'll use 3 Affiliated in Newtown for an example. When we go to buy gas at the Cenex station, or one of her neighbors, Mark Fox, goes to buy it. Actually, they grew up across the street from each other, by the way. The pump at the Cenex store is blind, if you will. It doesn't matter who you are when it comes to buying your gas at that specific location where that incidence of taxation to the ultimate consumer takes place. If my wife buys it, she pays the state's tax. If someone who's an enrolled member of the 3 Affiliated Tribes buys the gas at that same station, he or she is going to be paying a tribal tax. And how we go to ensure that that is the truth and the reality of the matter is that not only do we have the ordinances that the tribes enact, but we also, and the state's laws, we enter into compacts with each tribe for each tax type. And in each of those agreements, we specifically delineate that the tribe has, the tribe as a sovereign nation has its own jurisdiction to enforce its laws and ordinances on its reservation and upon its membership. And it has certain rights among that it can impose on non-members. The state concurrently has jurisdiction to, in this case, tax certain transactions that take place on a reservation by non-enrolled members. And so that harmony that's been created in the agreements respects both the sovereignty of the individual nations, the Native American nations, as well as the state's opportunity and right to tax certain transactions. And so that coexistence has been memorialized in each of the agreements. And finally, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I said for each tax type, what we have decided is, what in the best interests of all parties concerned, is for each tax type that's at issue, we have a separate agreement. And that's simply not a gloom and doom thing, but if there ever is a challenge or a problem with the agreement with respect to one tax type, it's not at the expense of another tax type for which there may not be a disagreement between the state and the tribes. And so we've separated those out just for the sake of continued harmony and good relations. But again, we have concerns that we may be stepping out of our lane if we get into something that's on a broader scale, such as the sales tax, as Mr. Davis pointed out. And so Representative Schmidt astutely raised the question. Legislative Council, with our input, addressed the question. And again, we believe that that is something where it ought to properly be coming before you for your guidance or direction as to how to proceed. But we have no problems going forward if that be the wishes of the Legislative Assembly. As I said, we think we're pretty darn efficient about how we can do this, and we're able to do it, and we're willing to do it for a small fee. But we're happy to be a service provider. And that's, again, how, at the end of the day, that's how we look at this, is we want to be able to enable the revenue that should be going properly to the right sources, and we think we can do it efficiently, and we think it's the right thing to do if the legislature agrees. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions, Senator Elke?
Mr. Chairman and Dan, the 1% administrative fee that you collect for administering the tobacco tax or motor vehicle and special fuels taxes, that's 1% of the tax collected, correct? Or is it 1%?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Elke, it's 1% of the share that would otherwise be going to the tribe. Because it would make no sense from an economic point of view to assess a fee against the portion that would be coming back to the state to whatever coffer that those state dollars would go into. Okay. But it's the portion that would go toward the tribe.
Right.
Sir.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you.
legislature, we always like to keep tweaking things, it seems. What happens with agreements when the legislature does some of its tweaking? Like, let's say, like, sales tax, I see there's some exemptions coming up this next time. Does that just automatically take effect there? Or say, like, gas tax, if we change the rate of gas tax or something. Are the agreements set up in such a way that everything just kind of automatically changes, or does it require tribal action, or how does that work?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, how that works has been addressed in the agreements. What we promise to each other is that if there are substantial differences that occur as a result of legislative action or action by the respective tribal government, we promise to come back to the table if those differences are substantial enough to where one party or the other or both feel that it's necessary to come back and renegotiate the agreement. And typically, it's not a renegotiation of the agreement alone. It's a reevaluation of the ordinances that are in place. If the state makes a change, then we would consult the various tribal governments and say, this was a substantial enough change that we think that you should take it under consideration and make the change within your tribal government ordinance. So that opportunity exists. We promise each other in that agreement, in those agreements, to come to the table and try to resolve those differences. Somewhat tangential to that, we also promise that if there is such a difference of opinion with respect to the taxes that are going to be imposed, before we part company, we promise to come to the table one more time through Scott's office and through the governor's office to, again, try to resolve the differences that may exist and keep the agreements alive.
Okay. And then I was kind of wondering on enforcement, like you're collecting the tax, but let's say some merchant on a reservation that's got a sales tax agreement with them, but the merchant's not collecting it and you know it and so on. Does that end up becoming then a state court matter or a tribal court, or how does that work?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, yes and yes. Typical lawyer's answer, sorry. We also, in those agreements, express respect for the sovereignty of each other's enforcement capabilities and laws. And how we have agreed to operate is that if it's a matter that's under the jurisdiction of the state, we would continue to pursue it as we would any other collection or enforcement issue throughout the state. If it's a matter that involves the jurisdiction of the tribe, a Native American retailer or the like, then we defer to the tribal government for collection and enforcement. And that's one of the areas where we look to the ordinances within each of the tribal governments for that specific tax type. We look to see that they have enforcement and collection language so that if there is an unfortunate circumstance of noncompliance that we can't handle because we don't believe we have the authority to do so, the tribal government is not left hanging. They would have that, at least the ability in writing through their tribal code or ordinance to carry out that enforcement activity.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sir.
Chairman McLeod.
Thank you, Chairman. I want to kind of answer Representative Nelson with our tobacco tax. What I asked the council to do on our tobacco tax was the vendors charge the business and then make their payments so this doesn't happen. Being I have to do my gas report, my tobacco report, because I am a small business owner of a convenience store. So if someone were to retire, sell the business, go out of business, whatever, so this revenue isn't lost, it's worked right in with our tobacco tax. We're paying up front, the vendor's paying, and then the tribe is collecting after. Okay? Thank you.
Any other comments? Thank you, Dan. Any other comments on this issue? Not, well, thank you. And we'll move on to tribal roads. with Mr. Trotter from the Department of Transportation to remove.
I guess I'm back once again to request aid in the reconstruction of Jackrabbit Road. I mean, I've been here before. I think you have a little bit of the backstory, probably a lot of the backstory. I was visiting with Representative Nelson before we started, and one thing that he was talking about and requesting was some of the stats that you know, that will support this project. And you know, I've done some reports for this, and I've shared those with you. Some of the things that I'd like to I guess share today, you know, being that stats were brought up, I went back and I looked at police reports from 2005 to 2012, and I gathered those from our BIA law enforcement agency, that of accidents that occurred along Jackrabbit Road. And what I found was, in that time period, in those 7 years, there were 7 fatalities along that road, and another 56 car crashes that, you know, that varied in severity, you know, whether they're injuries or not. And there are actually some formulas that if you go into the U.S. Department of Transportation and look at their value of statistical life analysis, you can actually see that they assign monetary values to these accidents. And there are formulas, again, that you can plug in. And based on those numbers alone, over the next 25 years, by reconstructing that road and using some minor some minor improvements, using the most minimum improvement, that economically we stand to save right around $44 million. I mean, or, you know, the government, I guess, and that can expand all the way up to $65 million. And to be honest, this, at the time that I put these numbers together, the U.S. Department of Transportation has actually increased those values. So, for example, for a fatality, it's the value assigned is $6.5 million. That's up to right around either 9.5 or 11.5. I'd have to look, but that has substantially increased. So there are benefits for the state, you know, to redo this road. The chairman and I have came and presented and spoken to various departments, and one thing they wanted to see was bus usage. And so I've got I put together all those maps and those stats. I apologize for not bringing those, but I can definitely share those with you and email those to you if you'd like to review those as well. One thing that I found interesting was when the gentlemen from the tax department were speaking, and they were talking about basically special instances when the tribe and the state can come together and form an agreement. And I know state funds aren't typically spent on tribal roads, but, you know, maybe this could be one of those instances where we can find a way. And I guess what my purpose here is to request aid, you know, from you gentlemen, from you committee members, to see if there is some sort of agreement that the tribe and the state can come together and get this done for our people, who also happen to be North Dakota citizens as well. So I don't know, if you have any questions, I guess I can definitely address those. Or if the chairman.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Trotter, we often hear of bad road conditions out west in the oil patch and stuff. Have you visited out there?
Yep.
How do you think it compares to?
Well, the traffic is a lot higher, but you know, as far as conditions, road tops, a lot of those are the same. You know, narrow roads. Our population, I know somebody had mentioned earlier that, you know, we have such a dense population, and our roads, especially our concrete roads, and I believe there are right around 50 some miles of those, are they were constructed in 1976. They have 11-foot lanes. Those just don't hold up to current standards, current safety standards. And they're deteriorating. I mean, they're concrete roads. They're not something that we can just go in and do an asphalt patch on or mill it and overlay it. It has to be a total reconstruct. We have been looking for some innovative ways to redo these roads. One thing that we are in the process of is acquiring our own asphalt plant so that we can do some of this work ourselves. We can take our federal share from the Tribal Transportation Program and stretch it as far as we can. We recently started our own striping, and with that we'll, once the striping is complete on our reservation, you know, we plan to market ourselves and to offer these services elsewhere to bring in some type of revenue. So we are looking for ways to do this for ourselves, but right now, because of the condition of the road, we need immediate help. And for a project this size, you know, that's not going to come with, even if we do have that slow, steady stream of revenue, it's not going to be the immediate fix that we need.
And about how long is Jackrabbit Road?
Approximately 14.6 miles. Actually, Jackrabbit Road consists of three different BIA routes, and that's BIA Route 10, BIA Route 15, and BIA Route 8. It's kind of a dogleg road that connects our Belcourt and Dunseith communities, and other than BIA Route 7, you know, it's our most heavily traveled road, and it's by far our most dangerous.
Other questions, Glenn? Comments? Representative Trottier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Trottier, any idea on costs?
On cost, yes. We actually have a couple different engineers' estimates, and the total reconstruct would cost right around $22 million. It's pretty substantial. We have another proposal that doesn't address all of our vertical curves, so they'll actually be, you know, the hills. There'll be less material move, like soils, but what we'll do is we'll widen the road, and you know, and that one's right around $14 million. But you know, if we could, you know, we definitely would need the total reconstruct. Most of those accidents that occur on that road are again because of road conditions, people avoiding, whether it's a break in the road or you know, there's no room for error. Sometimes people just drift, and if you're coming over one of the curves, there's no reaction time because the lanes are so narrow. And there actually isn't a whole lot of recovery area in the ditches as well. I know Representative Nelson can attest to that. You know, it's, you're in the road top or you're in a like a 4-foot drop into the ditch. There's, in some areas there just isn't any ditch. It's dangerous.
I may continue, Mr. Chair. What kind of a surface would you?
Asphalt.
Okay.
And the reason I would like to go asphalt is because repairs tend to be a little cheaper on that. The area that we live in, we have a high water table, and that varies from year to year, so we get a lot of movement under our roads you know, even with a proper bases installed. But and again, that another step that we took is we purchased a machine called an asphalt dipper there, where we could go in, mill this ourselves, and then, you know, replace it. So by installing an asphalt top, it would be more beneficial for us.
Thank you.
Any other questions? No, thank you, Ron.
Okay. All right.
Mr. Henke? There's another Ron. Mr. Henke is Deputy Director from the Engineering Department, DOT.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ron Henke. I am the Deputy Director for Engineering for North Dakota Department of Transportation. And I'd like to start out just say that DOT's, the Department of Transportation has always had a good working relationship with the tribes in North Dakota, and we continue to work in partnership with them to provide a safe transportation system across the state. As a result, there are federal grants available to them for roads like the Jackrabbit Road, and that seems to be the one that keeps coming up to us too, is what can we do to help with Jackrabbit Road. And what I'd like to do is just cover a few programs that are available. The first one is the Federal Grants Program, and what it is, it's a program put out by the U.S. Department of Transportation. They solicit for projects, and they put out criteria that they are looking for to find projects that meet that criteria. And through that program, you can apply for grant money. You have to show how you meet the criteria. You have to show how you're going to fund the project, because in most cases, these grant programs don't fund the whole project. It'll fund a portion of them. Right now, we are not aware that the federal government's receiving applications at this time. They just awarded probably, I would say, about a month back, the last grants that they laid out. It is a $600 million program that came out through the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act that was put out in 2014. We have obtained one grant that North Dakota has, and that's the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara Nation up in Fort Berthold. They were looking for a comprehensive transportation project to accommodate the changes at Fort Berthold. And they received $1 million, and you'll see there in the testimony they got $1 million, but the project was estimated to be $3,942,000, so they got about 25%. We do have a highway safety improvement program that the Department of Transportation uses, and we send out letters to the tribes, to the cities, to the counties, and we invite them to submit safety projects where they would like to spend some highway safety funds. We do this in October. These letters are just going out at this time, but I do want to share with you, it's a data-driven program. We review crash history and stuff to try to figure out where's the best place that we can invest some safety dollars to help reduce fatalities and serious injuries on public roads. Some of the projects we have done is we do a lot of turn lanes with safety program with these eight safety dollars, rumble strips we've done, recovery approaches at T intersections, curve delineations like chevrons or delineator posts or something like that to help define curves, and we've done some pedestrian stuff where we put like a countdown signal at a crossing or something like that to help those that are crossing. We did do one of these on the Spirit Lake Reservation a while back, and it was at BIA 1 and BIA 6 near St. Michael, and we installed some recovery approaches with that project. And on BIA 21, we did a widened road shoulder space and in slopes for within the clear zone. But again, it's typically a spot location. It's not like address a whole corridor. Our rumble strip program that we did was a statewide program, but it was through data of all the crossing center line, runoff the road type crashes. We did start another program that we call our local road safety program. We started it in 2013, and we're working with the tribes, the counties, the townships, and again, the goal is to improve safety on the highways, but again, it's a data-driven program. We are emphasizing establishing safety areas. We're identifying high-priority safety projects. Again, spend the dollars where we can make the biggest impact. Example of that, like, if we find out through a region where there's a lot of people missing curbs, maybe a curb that is a specific radius or something, we would take a countywide approach and put chevrons or delineators at all curbs within that county to try to help improve that. We are currently setting up some meetings with tribal agencies to take place at the end of this year to take a look and to develop a local road safety program for each area. Last two things is we gather all this data through a crash reporting program, which they call and refer to as TRACS. The DOT is actively working with the tribal agencies to develop and implement this electronic crash reporting system and to assist tribes in coordinating current crash data in an effort to help reduce traffic crashes in the future. Specifically with Jackrabbit Road, I thought it'd be good to point out that the Turtle Mountain Reservation Law Enforcement Agency, they have the equipment, they've gone through the training for the TRACS program so that they have it at their exposure if they want to use it. And according to North Coast Entry Code, state highway funds can only be spent on projects that are associated with state highways. So we can't just go spend state dollars that come to us on roads that aren't state highways. But we'll continue to work with the tribes on any federal programs that come available where we can spend some funds. Mr. Chairman, that's my testimony, and I'll answer any questions I can.
Senator Elke.
Mr. Chairman, Ron, in my neighborhood when development was first built and the road got put in, it was our personal road, and eventually we talked to the county and they took it over. Does that ever happen with the state relative to reservations, for instance? Would they ever say, hey, tell you what, we'll give you the road? Or you know, it's at this point now would you please state do the maintenance on it or something? Does that ever happen?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Elke, I know we have done it on a county road where we've taken over county roads. Sometimes we've swapped with counties to where we find a county road that maybe has more traffic. It'll become a state highway, and the state highway that has lesser traffic, depending on how development, would then become a county road. I am not aware of us ever doing that on with a BIA route. That'd be a little more challenging because it is another federal agency to bring into the loop and stuff. I do know that the tribes use those BIA routes and some of our state routes, and my understanding is the BIA funds are distributed depending on how many lane miles they have and stuff. So that's how the funds get sent out to the tribes to fix by BIA routes.
One more. Ron Trotter that was up here before said that it's a $22 million fix, roughly, or maybe that's exactly or accurate. Have you had a chance to look at that, or has the DOT looked at that to, confirm that? I'm not saying it wouldn't be accurate. I'm just wondering if that would meet your standards at that point.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Elke, we have not saw the estimate or what they're planning on doing there. I can tell you that about 2 weeks ago, the director and I drove that route, take a look at it and stuff. Pavement's in tough shape. It is narrow. There's not a lot of recovery space. It seems like you get halfway down the ditch and there's trees and fence lines, and there's a ton of access points on that road. So I don't know what it would cost. It does look like a lot of work, though, because if you want to widen it, you're going to have to probably purchase some right-of-way and remove a bunch of trees and fix some vertical curves and maybe try to improve some of the access points where they're located and stuff. So, but we have not seen the estimate.
Okay.
With these tire grants, Mr. Henke, are they usually 25%, or in a situation like this, would they be eligible to try and get more with the safety issue being what it is?
Mr. Chairman, the Tiger grants can be any range of funds that would come federal. Generally, when we've applied for them, we'll ask for 40% Tiger, and then we have to demonstrate how we're going to use other funds to cover the other 60%. We did get one on a railroad where we tried to improve up by Devil's Lake there. It was a $100 million project. We got $10 million of it. So it can be as low as 10%. Can it be higher? Yeah. I have never seen one come at 100%.
Mr. Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Henke, I know, you know, my world, and it kind of reflects to the Tiger grants, whenever an RFP comes out from the feds of a federal grant, you know, I'll use an example of like the health department, say a large grant that comes out, say for suicide prevention or something, you know, that is open to the state and to the tribes. We've really looked at that from time to time, and looking kind of in the mirror, so to speak, our state departments thinking that, yes, it would be nice to have the grant, but yes, we could probably survive without it. Meanwhile, the tribes are probably going to apply. Is that something the department would consider looking at in the future of the Tiger grants? Is that kind of not really competing with the tribes of a Tiger grant and doing a little bit of homework with each tribe saying, you know, is Turtle Mountain going to apply or is Stand Out going to apply for this next round of Tiger grants, you know, and maybe help supporting it that way versus sometimes competing. I'm not sure if you guys have went down that road or not, but maybe something to consider.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Davis, we have sent letters of support to some projects, not all. I do believe Standing Rock got a grant a while back on Highway 24 to do some work down there. So, you know, we've always looked at opportunities where it's improving safety to provide a letter of support for that grant.
Mr. Chairman, too, and I go back to maybe a couple of committee hearings ago that we talked about when a tribe so chooses to convert some of the lands into trust, you know, and I think I've kind of been clear on that, that it really takes away the county tax base, you know, and it really puts the tribe in, you know, a situation where, and the county for that matter, where now the county coffers can't touch the BIA roads because of state law. And it really puts the tribe at a disadvantage because of the BIA funds that are allocated through the feds. Always and very, very minimal, and it will always continue to be that way. So how can we look at, you know, other ways, and maybe some of these tax agreements are either way, Mr. Chairman, whether, excuse me, a tribe here in the room so chooses to go sales and use, oil and gas, whatever it may be, because I look back at the, again, going back to MHA, excuse me, you know, I think part of the agreement was the 10% set aside for infrastructure up in Fort Berthold. Again, that's roads and housing development, you know, water, sewer, etc. That 10% set aside with that tax agreement would be used for those tribal projects. So, again, I think it's a value to really look at that here as tribal leadership in the room to, you know, if you're going to go down that path with somebody's tax agreement, with during the session that, you know, maybe these are some of the negotiating points that you may want to consider.
Mr. Chairman?
Chairperson Pearson?
On here, you state that you're setting up meetings with the tribes for your safety program. Who would you contact at Spirit Lake? Because we currently have a county road that's I think three of our school districts, our schools travel on, and it's gravel. And I don't think anyone's ever wanted to address that issue before, but it's a safety matter. I don't know if you know which one I'm talking about or what, but...
Mr. Chairman, committee member, no, I don't know which one you're talking about. The contacts are through our programming division. Jane Berger in that office has been taking the lead on that. She usually works with our district engineers because our district engineers know who to contact at the tribe because they work daily with those tribes and stuff. So I can't tell you off the top of the head who they would be contacting out there.
But we can contact you and give a number and a name?
Mr. Chairman, committee member, you bet you can.
Okay, thank you.
Chairman McLeod.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron, there's a wind energy project going on between Wawa, St. John, and Belkert up in that area. And one Sunday afternoon, in 1 hour, I counted 314 trucks going down Highway 5. Even though that's not the route they are to be taking, but because it's the newest and smoothest road, that's what they use at this point. Jackrabbit Road has Belkert School District, Ojibwa School, Dunsey Day, Dunsey Public, Willette, St. John, that utilizes Jackrabbit as a bus route. I don't know if Wawa goes up that far or not. When we had the summit, the tribal summit here a few weeks back, it was noted that the Bakken, let's say, will be moving into Turnon within the next 3 years. You know, so that Berthold and the whole western part of the state is looking at, we'll be looking at the same issues within 3 years of our whole infrastructure, especially our roads. The last thing I want to say is, you said you went down Jackrabbit Road. Did you drive it at 55?
Mr. Chairman, I wasn't actually driving. The director was driving, but I would say probably not.
Yeah.
That pavement's in tough shape.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Representative Cartier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ron, this is an engineer question and does have something to do with what Mr. Trottier brought up in his water table. Do engineers, road engineers, look at drain tile on roads?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Trottier, we actually look at two different types of drain tile and system. Some of those systems will be merely a foot and a half below the ground on the edge of the shoulder to grab the water, get the water out of the base, and let it enter in the ditch. The other ones we've put in, we call them, I'll say, a fishbone shape, where we'll go down 6 feet where we know we got high water tables, and we put in a wishbone with P-rock and stuff to get the water in that and get it out from underneath the road to try to help stabilize that ground underneath there. Generally, you need some kind of lift station or a very low ditch to make that work, but we have put them in on the interstate and other roadways too.
Mr. Carter, you have your hand up, whether you had a question or a comment.
No, I just wanted to come to the mic, please, so you can get on tape.
The Tiger program was brought up, and I actually had a visit from our district engineer, our federal highway rep, through the Tribal Transportation Program. Tiger 6 was recently awarded. That's the one that you were, you alluded to. We actually were recipients in Tiger 4, and from what I understand, we were the first recipients to have that direct relationship from Federal Highway. That and what I mean is, you know, the project wasn't routed through the state, and we did that on BI Route 7, and we got $4 million, and it was very beneficial. But you know, again, we have our roads are so highly deficient. You know, we have to take this aggressive approach to try to get them fixed, and you know, that's why we're here today. And one thing that my federal highway rep kind of told me again off the record was, once you've received, you've been a recipient of this award, you know, the chances of getting it for another project are slim to none. We've continued to submit, and but I guess I just wanted to add that in there. So, all right, thank you.
Thank you. Is there any
Any other questions for Mr. Henke? Representative Nelson.
Thank you. Mr. Henke, I guess the question I kind of have is how do we rate safety, you know, when I think of Jackrabbit again and the school buses, the real experience you missed was morning when the school buses with all those driveways are picking up kids and there's all that traffic on there and it all gets backed up and then it's hills and there's no room for anybody. I mean, it's really dangerous. How is that put in numbers for safety, or how do we count that? Because I mean, it's you just see it, and it's just amazing. I mean, it's surprising we don't have more accidents than we do. But how do we add that up? How do we really put that into some numbers that people can grasp?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, that's probably one of the most challenging things we have, because a lot of our programs are more of a reactive type approach, where you got to have the accidents to show. Our local road safety program, the new one we started in 2013, was a little different approach in that we were trying to get out in front of things, to where, you know, if you would drive a road with a lot of school bus stops and stuff, and there's always a challenge when you got starts and stops and stuff. It creates a challenging situation for the driver. You know, that's a hard one. I can't come up with anything right now that'd give you a data point to say, well, this is why this is. Now, through that program, though, we might be able to figure out some way to say, well, if it's a school bus route and there's so many stops, is there a way to use that as a tool to say that's not a good mix of traffic?
Well, thank you.
Any other questions? Chairman McLeod.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. How much is allocated for Willard County this budget year?
Mr. Chairman, Chairman McLeod, I don't know that answer. I can get you it. We have it.
Okay.
If you want to, we can send it to the committee, and I can tell you exactly what Rolette's getting for the federal programs.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Well, I guess when we talk about road issues, this is the one that's come to our committee and definitely an issue, and why we're looking for help is to... If you've talked about the Tiger program, if that's been utilized once and it's hard to get it the second time, or so we've been told, but I guess we're looking for answers to how to fix Jackrabbit Road without changing the name of the road. So thank you for coming over today and sharing what you have with us.
Chairman, if we're having a little schedule, may I suggest we put Mr. Les Thomas on for regarding tourism? I know we're going to put him on the end, but I think he's biting at the bit over here, so I see his knee going up and down pretty quick here, so.
Yeah, you got a sore jaw biting at the bit, so better get going here.
He'd ask us to make some copies, so I'll just keep a couple up here. We don't have a vice chair. I can't step in.
Go ahead and start.
Yeah, it's old boy died. They buried him on Friday, September 6th. The youngest one.
Good morning, everyone.
Mr. Chairman, Johnson, committee members, and
distinguished tribal leaders and guests. One comment I'd like to make before I move on to our tourism one is, my name is Les Thomas. I'm the vice chair of the Trinity Mountain Tourism Association, back home, and I also work with the tribal council and with tourism. And with the tourism part, I'll go into that, but one statement, this Jackrabbit Road goes through the heart of Trinity Mountains, right through the center. And on a daily basis, how many kids are on that road with some buses? So that's just one statement I wanted to make. And it's been, what, 38 years since it's been in existence, paved? So that's a long time for one road to be used. And I imagine they only run about 20 miles an hour when you're traveling, right? So, again, thank you for allowing me to be part of this presentation today. We've been working on the tourism project here for a few years now, and recently we met again with the United Tribes Board of Directors, which is all the chairs of the North Dakota tribes and representatives. So what you have in front of you is a resolution that they passed, and it's a request to have the organization of the North Dakota Tourism Alliance underneath that board, and to move forward with trying to get a resolution, a bill, legislative bill, if we can't get to be part of the governor's budget. If we're looking at tourism, you're looking at the third biggest industry in the state of North Dakota. And if this went forward, and we just had a $52-54 million expansion project here at the North Dakota Heritage Center, which is very, very unique. And we got quite a Native American Indian display there, and now there's a hall of fame there for Native Americans. So North Dakota's been working good, it seems, to with Indian country, and it's just been building and building. And so with this tourism, it would be a win-win for the state of North Dakota to work with the tribes. When the world traveler comes to the state of North Dakota, they have to come in through the airports. That's all the major cities. And from there, there's a study been done that the first place when they do come into the United States, they want to go to national parks and state parks in Indian country. And that's when a study has been done on this. And we work well with the North Dakota Tourism Department. Fred Walker, and he goes out and markets in North Dakota to the world, Australia, New Zealand, Japan, all the Scandinavian countries. And the state legislators appropriated about $6 to $7 million to the North Dakota Tourism Department to do this. So we'd like to also take Indian country in the state of North Dakota to the world. And how do we do this? We're asking maybe some help in the state of North Dakota, and let's be a partner. Because the state of North Dakota uses Indian country even in their pamphlets when they go promote Indian country, and in the state of North Dakota and Indian country. So we'd like to partnership up with the state of North Dakota and get a little bit more help from the state of North Dakota to develop our amenities on our reservations. And so that's why we figured meeting with our board of directors first, we put a plan together, and then come to this committee, and if we can't be part of the governor's budget, then take it to the state legislators. And let's see if we can put something together, a good plan, and take it forward, and take our great state of North Dakota with the Indian country here in the state of North Dakota to the world. So that's why this resolution passed by our tribal leaders is very instrumental in getting the ball rolling. Through Scott's office, we did put a board together here a few years back, but the board hasn't been meeting, and so we would like to restructure everything, and so that's why we took it to the board of directors here from our tribal leaders, and they passed it unanimous. So now we work with Scott's office, with the United Tribes Board of Directors, and with the state of North Dakota to go forward. And if Scott can meet with the governor's office and see if through this resolution that we could be part of that budget, governor's budget, but if not, then what's the next step, you know, to take this forward? Are there any comments or questions?
Mr. Davis.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Les, I know when the governor and I were up there a few weeks back, the question was about the Outdoor Heritage Fund. I know the Outdoor Heritage Fund that currently exists in statute probably does and does not pertain to some of the tourism activities up in Turtle Mountain. Because I know he was very, governor was concerned about some of the questions you had, or the tribe would have, as far as what qualifies for the Outdoor Heritage Fund. So I'm wondering if that was clarified, because I know we had talked with a little bit with Lyle Moore on those questions. Or there is a proposed meeting to come down and meet with some of the industrial committee folks on clarifying.
Like, yes, we took care of that meeting. The chairman, McLeod, sent myself down here, and we met with the chair of the committee and the industrial commission secretary, Ms. Fine, and also a lady from the governor's office. So going through all that, they're actually going to help us, you know, going forward, because we never could get out of committee. We bring it to them, and actually one of the projects the committee did fund was playground equipment, so we put one forward, and we got refused. So we wondered why. So again, it just the partnership and getting together and putting the plan together. And so what we're going to do is put our plan together and bring it down early. And that way we can critique it, and if we can restructure it, whatever, for the next slowdown is November 2nd, and then in December we'll make our presentations on that, especially for the Outdoor Heritage Fund.
Continue.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The other thing we'll work on, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, is that the snowmobile trails up in and around Trail Mountain too. I think probably the last half a year now, my colleagues at the Parks Department have been working with Trail Mountain Tribe about making those snowmobile trails connect up in the Trail Mountains from north of Botano all the way to the Belcourt area too. So we're pretty confident that we should have something in place here on some type of agreement maybe, but really sharing and ultimately providing a winter tourism getaway during the winter months for the Trail Mountain area, and also obviously the Belcourt area too. So we're working on that as well, Mr. Chairman.
And one other thing that the state of North Dakota here has partnered up with all of the tribes for the grand opening here for the Heritage Center and for the 125th anniversary of the great state of North Dakota. Each tribe will be represented down there to do a presentation. And again, I took this to the board of directors and with Mr. Poplin, and we got this accomplished at the soft opening on July 26th. We did a presentation. Keith Mayer did the flutes. The dancer was Kevin Locke, and we had some of our fiddle maintaining our thing with Doc Boone, and his team came down. So again, in November 2nd, we're also part of the presentation again. So it's new partnerships, you know, and it's a chance to, our chairman will be doing the address for our tribe, and it's a chance for the public to understand Indian country, you know, but, for us to get out of there and say, hey, the tribes were here before the state of North Dakota, but look what's developed in the partnerships, and we want to do things on a positive level. And that's why, again, if we can push this forward through the governor's office or state legislators, that's what our objective is.
Representative Trottier.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question. Does the North Dakota Tourism Department share anything of their budget with any of the tribal tourism?
There's small grants that you can go after. I think there's a match grant for $5,000 for marketing, but otherwise, no. It's basically for the state of North Dakota to take that to the world, so why not include Indian country?
Understand. One last, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to make a personal statement, not on behalf of the committee here, but I truly believe myself that taking away the logo for UND took away a lot from tourism for the Indian country. And I think when we lost that, we lost a lot of notoriety for North Dakota. And
yeah, there's a lot of pros and cons.
Personally, I understand that, and it'll make some enemies. I understand that, but that's just a fact. Thank you.
Any other questions?
In person, I agree with you. I do not want that to happen either.
Other questions, committee? Mr. Sitting Bear?
just a comment. I think this is something that the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe will also support. Our tourism office is led by one individual who has a very limited budget, and it's kind of funny to hear how our tours go. It's usually you pay for the gas and I'll take you and show you everything type deal. And she does an excellent job. She's an amazing storyteller. She can tell you the personal stories that had occurred between Sitting Bull through Red Tomahawk, all of them, and she really humanizes our past leaders. And she knows the sites, some very significant sites. And we have every week we have visitors coming in from all over the place. I mean, across the world. Just last week we had some guys from Sweden. Week before we had a group from Russia that had come in and spent 2 days with us. So there's definitely a market for it, if you want to call it, or a need for this. And this would be something that we support. So just want to make that comment.
And when you mentioned the Swedes, when we had the Roof Fest, when that happens, we have people coming throughout the world, coming to the state of North Dakota. And we've our tribe, with the help of our council and our Skydancer, have promoted the Chittle Mountain area 2 years in a row, and allowed us to put a packet in with all their marketing to all their travel companies that they do business with. So that's one step our tribe already has taken. And it's not cheap, to do that. So when they come to the state of North Dakota, coming and going to the Roof Fest, we want them coming through the Indian country too, at least in our Turtle Mountain area. So with the help of, with the state of North Dakota, this could be a win-win. It will be a win-win. So, but we need help.
Senator Carter?
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. And when I was down and visited Standing Rock, maybe Mr. Sitting Bear can attest to how many foreign countries come through, and maybe it's the same with up in Turtle Mountain. How many foreign countries do you know offhand come through?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I've been down here working for Chairman Rashamble for about a year now, and I would probably say probably close to a dozen different groups of visitors that come through, and sometimes they let us know ahead of time, sometimes they're unannounced. And there's a Scott probably knows a little more about this. I believe it's in, is it Germany or is it Norway? They actually have a powwow over there that they've taken from the Dakota tribes. They're visitors as well that come through. They might come through the other tribes as well too. So there's definitely interest.
The plan of action would be when he's talking about these Germany. Definitely, we have Native American Indian clubs over there. That's quite a unique country when it comes to Indian country. But the plan of action here would be, with the new addition here of the Heritage Center, it would be like the hub from here, Standing Rock, go around in a circle, and it would be a two-week tour throughout Indian country. And that's what we had talked about with Scott's office some time ago. And if we could accomplish that, the people that come from throughout the world, they do come to the bigger cities because they don't hear much about Indian country, but they actually want to go out there and experience it firsthand. So how do we do that? What's the closest reservation here? Standing Rock. So that's basically where most of them go. But and every tribe is unique. Nobody's the same. So like I said, if we can put this tour together with the help of North Dakota, making that circle life. So again, we appreciate all the help. And if there's any more questions or maybe our chair would like to make a couple comments, I appreciate it.
Chairman McLeod?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. Les? Yeah, Turtle Mountain supports this, you know, through all the tribes. We passed this resolution at United Tribes, and tourism is it's kind of like a new market, an untapped market that people don't really look at, but, you know, with Turtle Mountain, to show our heritage, to show what we're about. Being we're so close to Canada, our Canadian neighbors, you know, they spend a lot of money up in Turtle Mountain. That's why, you know, I support this wholeheartedly, because if we can, with the new heritage center we're building, if we can show and display and help and describe and benefit anybody out there, you know, it's also a learning tool to show our history, where we've been, where we're at, and where we're going. You know, that's why, as the chairman for Turtle Mountain Band, I support this also. Thank you.
And Scott, I think we can wrap it up with your comments.
Yeah, I think, Mr. Chairman, it's just the resolution, I think, is a great start. You know, if I was wearing my legislator hat today, I think I would want a breakdown of what each tribe is proposing in regards to the $1 million, you know. As always seems to be, I'm sure you guys get that quite a bit. We need $1 million, you know. So my question is, why $1 million? You know, break that down. I think a more in-depth, detailed budget, game plan, you know. I think the tribe always has to have some type of skin in the game, you know, which is a government-to-government process, obviously. So, yeah, just some more questions, but I give credit to Les and to the Tourism Alliance for doing this. I mean, I think they're really trying to replicate what the tribal colleges have done, you know, in creating an entity, an association, a committee that will become active and get involved and lobby you folks. So,
well, thank you, and thank you for your presentation, Mr. Thomas. There's certainly a lot of history there, and a lot of people are curious and interested in that history. So I appreciate the folks that take the time to preserve this history to move it on to the next generation.
Thank you, Chairman Johnson. Thank you for your time, committee members.
Committee, with that, I believe we'll take our noon break now and be back here at 1 so we can wrap this up. Thank you. Welcome back in the session committee and go to our 1 o'clock or 1 p.m. agenda. We've got Mr. Miller here today. Okay. So come to the podium and push the button there so the blue light's on and you're ready to go.
Good afternoon. I'm Gary Miller. Come from Agritech. That's up in Gary, North Dakota. And along with me is Bob Johnson. He's with EIC Distributing. And we came to show you a product today. It's called Permazyme. And what it is a product that you put into the road base to create a solid base. And we've got some samples here. And we'd like to pass them around and show them to you. And if you have any questions, we can explain it to you. We've done a lot of work here in North Dakota already. Williams County has got over 100 miles that they've done, and they're double chip sealing over the top of it with a lot of success. I mean, it's and right now they are, you know, if you're going to pave a road, it's about $1.5 million a mile, and they're able to build this road, double chip seal over top of it, and they're budgeting about $350,000 a mile. So it's significant in savings. So if at that time, Bob, if you want to come up here and test.
I'm Bob Johnson from IEC Distributing.
Permazyme is our product, and as Jerry said, our website is permazyme.biz, B-I-Z, and we are very familiar with North Dakota. We've been here now since 2010, and if you talk to Representative Scarfo, he'll probably show you a brick of Permazyme that we did, and it was exactly 4 years ago today that we did that work in the Divide Williams County line and Wild Rose. And the product has worked. It's worked very well. We've had some adjustments that we've had to make because we have discovered, of course, there's quite a bit of silt in the northern plains. Beautiful black soil, great for growing corn. Just don't build a road out of it. We've discovered that Permazyme will cause the silt to rise to the surface, and when it gets wet, it gets very slippery. So we've been able to overcome that, though, by using different procedures to make it work. What we found is that the Permazyme will firm up the silt material, and it'll get as hard as glass when it's dry. Motor grader won't touch it. And of course, again, when it gets wet, it gets slippery, but then it'll glue back hard again. So what we found is if we add this road-based material that you see in front of you, this is what you would call a North Dakota Class 5, and they call it a modified Class 5. And in Williams County, we've used this, and they follow it strictly by our recommendations to this guideline. And where we've used this, on about 70 miles of road, we've had zero incidents of failure. The silt is encapsulated, it's held in check, and then we've gone through and put a wearing surface on the top of it, and I think Jerry circulated it. It's a simple chip seal surface that you see oftentimes used in asphalt maintenance, where you spray the oil on top of an asphalt surface. This one is formulated with a specific product, asphalt designed for North Dakota. It comes from a company in Billings, Montana. It has a lot of polymer in it, so it has elasticity to stretch during the different times of the year. We don't have any cracking with it, and it hangs on and retains the chip. So what's really nice about it too is it becomes a moisture barrier, and we don't have any water infiltrating into the roads, and consequently also the Permazyme seals up the silt and becomes impermeable. In the 100 miles that we treated in Williams County, we have not had one frost boil return, not one.
How strong is it?
It's, you can crumble a piece of that. That came from Montreal County. That was their base. That's McKenzie County that came from. When we crush the samples, that's how we test the strength. The one that Representative Scarfell shows, it crushes at almost 3,000 PSI, which is the same strength as concrete. We don't compare it to concrete because it's different. It's soil. It still will age and weather on the surface. It's still dirt. But it's bound together inexpensively. And when it has a wearing surface on it, 20 years plus for life. I can't tell you forever because that sounds ridiculous, but I'll tell you that it will last for at least 20 years. I'm a retired highway superintendent from Northern California, and I started using the material in 1998. In my county, I have over 50 miles that I treated there as well. Did the same process with the chip seal over the top of it. 3 years ago, had the highway superintendent from Williams County come out. Dennis Nelson flew out to California. After driving about 40 miles of roads, he goes, "Bob, I get it. I want it." And that's what we started to do. Now we've gone through about 25 miles have gone through the nasty winter that we had last year, the 19 below. I have pictures of that. I was here and went through the 50 below. No cracking. It's held up extremely well going through, and the oil truck traffic continues to run on it. So
So we have an alternative that we'd like to offer to show that there is another product out here that is very economical. The cost of the material itself is under 10 cents a cubic foot. And just to give you other stabilizers that are out there, cement runs 90 cents a cubic foot. This will not crack, where you'll see cement crack every 50 to 60 feet. You'll see a crack, and it'll happen the first year. This won't crack. It has its own ability to move and contract with the weather, and it self-heals itself. It's an amazing product, very economical. It's environmentally extremely friendly. It's a fermented product using feed materials and base stock of molasses. When I first heard it, I thought, what kind of snake oil guy is coming to see me? It took me about a year or two. I keep on going back out to look at that road that I did treated, and I couldn't believe how solid the darn thing was turning out. And I soon became a believer. When I first started using it in Northern California, I was the second county to use it. Now virtually every county north of San Francisco uses it on a regular basis for treating their roads. So it's something that we're going to see more. We're here for the long haul for North Dakota. That's why we have Jerry as our representative. I can come from California and sell you anything, right? No. We firmly believe in our product, and we firmly believe in North Dakota. That's why we have Jerry as our rep here. And so we want local representation. And also, we have made a commitment. The reason we got here in the first place was an invitation from the UND Center of Innovation, and they introduced us to give a talk on Permazyme, to talk about some of the problems they were having over in the oil patch, and that's how we got here. So in return, we donate, for every gallon of Permazyme we sell in North Dakota, we donate back to the Center of Innovation at UND, and proud to say that we've donated over $76,000 to date. So we aren't taking, we're giving back to the community, and we firmly believe in North Dakota. Now I'm here to answer any questions that you may have on the product and or the process, because we're teaching you a process. So we're available.
Senator Elke.
Mr. Chairman, your first name again was?
Bob Johnson.
Bob. Yeah, two Robert. First names?
All right.
Bob, have any of your work in North Dakota been done on DOT projects to this point, or was that with county projects, or?
It's been with the county. There was a small DOT pilot project that was done by an allied company. I wasn't involved with it. Wish I was, because the area that they did, it would not work there, and I knew it wouldn't work. So,
but so why wouldn't it work in that area? Too wet?
It was extremely silty. It there was no way it was going to bind it together without some modification to the soil. And usually it means bringing in some sand or a little bit of clay. It was a subgrade material that was not going to work.
Okay, so like in Western North Dakota, where the bases of the roads weren't the best to start with, but you had to have a decent base anyway to make it work in a realistic situation.
Right.
What's the cure time on this? When you lay it down, mix it, blade it in, that's how it's applied, it looks like, from your pictures?
There's multiple ways of doing it. You can blade it in in Williston or Williams County, we're using a pulverizer to grind it in, and it's metered in through the machine.
And then pack it.
And then they pack it right away. We don't recommend going any. We do it in lifts to make sure we get good compaction. And they're treating the existing 9 inches of material, whatever's there, and then they're capping it with about 6 inches of the designated base material. So they're giving it a good section, but they're also on those very, very heavy truckloads that are going there. And of course, not a one of them's overloaded.
No, of course not. 85,000 max. So the cure time then is?
72 hours.
Okay.
Yep. But we drive on it immediately because we want some of that free compaction. And the beauty of this material is so forgiving that if we do get a blemish in it or a truck mark or something, we simply spray it with a dilute solution of enzyme. It reactivates its releases its bond. We reshape it, take the blemish out, compact it back, and it goes back hard again. And we have the ability to do that. You can do it 10 years from now, you can do it a week from now. It doesn't make any difference. This stuff will rejuvenate itself. So it's a very unique product.
One more. So are you trying to nail down the DOT and, you know, trying to get them to bless this product, or how's that going?
Yeah, we'd like to. I have been working with the materials labs in the past, and I need to get back on board with it. A lot of the hesitation, of course, is engineering, and I just took in additional samples for more engineering testing to be done. We do have thumb drive to share with all the different testing data that we do have on it. I'm not so sure that the DOT has it at this time, but I do need to get that over to their labs.
Mr. Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've kind of come across probably one of your competitors here about a good year and a half ago, kind of the same thing. I think we did a test run up in the Trail Mountains too of the product. I'm not sure how that worked out or not, but you know, my colleges, I spent a lot of time on roads. In fact, I used to run the screws with jacks on the paver, and so every now and then I'd take out my dipper and make sure I had my
red screed too.
Yep. And so I've spent a lot of time on that. So, thinking about the, I guess I know you answered my question about the engineering part, getting the DOT to bless this, but like knowing Senator Scarpa as well as I do, you know how he operates too. How did you kind of get the blessings from him and the county to do X amount of miles? And then second question to that too, considering the tribes here, and we have a lot of miles of tribal roads, you know, which would probably be another BIA blessing of how we get, some of those BIA roads up and running, because I'm sure California has a few tribes in maybe your neck of the woods too on that. And then last question would be, does this require like your standard gravel pit, crushing pit? Do you have to run it through, some type of mill and so forth and getting the product out to the field?
Yeah, the product comes concentrated and is simply applied through the water truck, so that portion is very, very easy. In Williams County, we're using about 40 gallons per mile when we're treating a section that deep. So you can put that in the back of a small car and actually haul it out there to the job site. And then we simply put it in with the water truck to apply it. I have worked with BIA on in my county that I had, and I'm very familiar with a lot of the engineering that they have. It does need to have some more approval through BIA. Fortunately, I have an engineer that we work with in Sacramento that does a lot of BIA work, and we'll work towards getting that approval as well. Same thing has to happen with the Corps of Engineers. You know, we do need to move forward with that. And let's see, we should use crushed material on to get the optimal binding of the binding together. And it does readily help hold it together. The native material that we use does an okay job for our foundation, but when you want to lock in long-term traffic stability, you do want to use a crushed material that, like we've designated in our spec. I hope that answers some of your questions.
Yeah, just, and just the last part of the question was, would it be of value to, I'm kind of maybe speaking on behalf of the tribes here, but I had the same gentleman, probably your competitor, come to my office one day and say, hey, would the tribes be interested in my product? I said, well, I don't know. And so we kind of did that, but also they did a, I think a half-mile stretch just to see, again, I'm just talking about 12 miles because you have the water tables are so high, a lot of frost boils up there, you know, and so forth, just Mother Nature, which I think is probably a little bit more challenging in Senator Scarpa's area. But is that something that your company would be looking at, just doing a mile, half-mile test run of a designated area up there or something?
We would entertain the idea of working with you on a pilot project, yeah. And you have to be where we know that the product will work, because the one that didn't work was actually, it was a swamp area, and tulies on everywhere. So I just knew that one was going to fail, and I'm not going to tell you that it's going to work when I know it's not going to work. So I'd have to look at the project, but we certainly could work with you on that.
Representative Trotter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bob, you've addressed the water table. When I went online and looked, do you still require people to go out to California to take the training?
No, we've had enough people trained here, including Jerry. Yeah.
Okay.
To where we can have somebody on site.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's usually a sales rep that we take out for training out in California. And oftentimes I am the one that does the training. I do training all over the world. Next week I go to Australia to do some training there as well. In May, I spent the better part of a month in Angola and South Africa doing training too. So we're using this product globally.
If I may continue, hard question or hard answer, probably. Any downfalls or negatives?
The Permazine?
Yeah.
You
mentioned the water table and that kind of a problem, frost boils, but.
What we discovered with water table or the frost boils is that once it's sealed off and once it's solidified and it's impermeable, we don't have frost boils. On your back of your brochure, the top picture is the one that we did in Wild Rose, and that particular road we did it in October of 2010. In June and July, that was the horrible 2011 winter that came through, and we had 110 inches of snow in Williston. That road was inundated with water for over a month. Every road around it closed except for that one. Even though there was water on the road, the truck still drove on it. And the only consequence was that the whole roadbed sunk down into the mire, but the Permazine never broke up. We didn't have any mud oozing through or anything, and there were two water depots at the top of the hill, and they continued to haul water 24/7. I was amazed by it. I've seen an awful lot with Permazine, and frankly, I was very, very amazed by it. The other thing issue about why I'm not too worried about the water table is that Permazine's also used to seal up leaking ponds. So there was one pond in particular in Sacramento that was treated in 1970, and it's still maintaining its integrity today. So the water doesn't seem to be an issue with it once it's been treated and cured. We don't have to seem to have a problem, provided that there's a proper amount of clay material that's in it. Not too much clay, not, and let me tell you right now, there's five things that it doesn't work on. And I think that's what you wanted to hear. It does not work on volcanic material. It does not work on sand. It doesn't work well with silt. It doesn't work well with recycled concrete. Even though the concrete is real fine, it won't bind it together. and it won't work with fat, what they call fat clay, real heavy, thick, pottery-type clay. Real bad gumbo. It won't work on it. Now, every one of those five can be modified. With a gumbo, you simply modify it with some sand and dilute the amount of gumbo that you have in there, and you bring some sand particles into it, and along with some gravel, so you have some structural integrity, and we can overcome those difficulties. The same thing with the sand. We add some more clay into it, volcanic material. I've experienced that on the Big Island in Hawaii, and we've had to import some clay from some of the other areas of Hawaii to get it to bind together. So I know what it works with and what it doesn't work with, but like I said, we can always modify it to make it work.
Continue.
Thank you again. Have you ever used it with a map with underlayment?
Yep.
Does that help?
Yes. We aren't the cure-all for everything. The county that I lived in, we had some real highly alkali clay soils, basically quicksand, and you would sink out of sight with a piece of equipment in the middle of the summer when everything was dry. And we had to put an underlayment into it. We used a product called Tensar, which is kind of a geotech woven material. And then we put our gravel on the top of it. We did it in Nigeria as well. We had that issue with the real fat, heavy clay that was sinking out of sight. So we aren't a cure-all for everything. Sometimes we need help. And that underlayment works well. Prior to using Permazine, that's what I had to use in order to... In my county, we grow rice in Northern California. And so we have 20 feet of, 20 feet of clay, black clay, and I put a foot of gravel down 20 years later, come back and can't find any because all the clay had migrated right through the gravel. So yeah, prior to Permazine, that's what we had to use.
But if I may continue, but I understand that if there wouldn't be the map, the water that comes up there solidifies it even more harder, does it? The Permazine treated material?
The water won't pump through it after.
Oh, no, but does it solidify the underside of the Permazine-treated material? If you know what I'm getting at, was if there wasn't a map there, the water that comes up, would it make it even harder underneath?
You know, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that one.
Okay. Maybe it would. And the last question I hope I got is, can it be formed? How hard is it when it's laid down? Can it be, I'm thinking a curb and gutter, can it be?
No, it.
Okay.
That, the comparison to concrete is where you're coming from. No, it can't be formed like that, like a slip form like you can with curb and gutter. However, it's used an awful lot and recommended for compressed earth bricks. And we're using it in third world countries right now, compressed earth bricks with Permazine. We're using it in Haiti, Costa Rica. It's in Nigeria, they're using it, and it works very, very well there. And the compressive strength we're finding is, it mirrors red brick at 3,000 PSI for a fraction of the cost because it's air dried, it's not kiln dried.
Any other questions, committee? Okay, thank you.
Well, thank you. I hope we can help the tribe out, and we're going to be dealing with the BIA on that as well.
Very good.
Okay,
thank you. Thank you, Jerry.
Thanks for your time.
Is there any more to talk about the transportation here, Mr. Davis? Okay. And our public instruction report, I think, has probably been canceled.
Yes, sir.
Tribal housing. We're down to 2 o'clock agenda. This is not like us to be ahead of schedule, but.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. A
kind of like what it is in the Bakken and Indian country across the state of North Dakota. Of course, housing is a big concern out there. We have some dwellings that share up to 9 families in a home. I am working with a company to open up a manufacturing plant to provide housing and jobs. Also for housing assistance program. I want to... I allocated X amount of dollars for 10% not to exceed $20,000 with the first-time home buyer program to the HUD 184 program for down payment assistance. But I allocated funds like that for housing tenants so I can free up a housing unit and get individuals into a home so I can kill two birds with one stone. I free up a unit, plus I put a family into a new unit. I think part of the biggest problem we'll have with housing would be probably a down payment assistance that most families would incur. We work with our CDFI to help families clear up their credit history. We'll help up to $5,000. And a lot of their credit history is because of IHS. If they send referrals and IHS is unable to pay the bill, then it goes against your credit history. So banks are kind of, so I decided, well, let's have CDFI help in this area. I know I had commented a while back in the paper that I think if we were to build 100 homes a month, we still wouldn't have enough homes. The housing in the Indian country has pretty much did away with the home ownership programs. So that's why you see a lot of modular homes, manufactured homes on reservations. It's fast, it's quick for housing needs. you know, if I could team up with the state somehow to help with down payment assistance or even some kind of tax credits for home builders, home construction companies to help and assist first-time home buyers or even a family that's outgrown their two-bedroom bungalow and they have 5 or 6 children and they need a home with a full basement that can convert into bedrooms and 3-4 bedroom upstairs. The average dwelling is 1,200 square feet. So it's like it's a big need, a big want in Indian country for homes. I'm sure Standing Rock shares the same concern, Spirit Lake. Like I said, we do have a company that we will be building homes, manufacturing homes. I was telling Steve, was it the Sitting Bear? Sitting Bear? A 1,200 square foot two-bedroom facility will be pushing out for around approximately $63,000. That would really help and assist not only in the country, but we want to get into the market in the Bakken and the Minot-Williston area. But what I'm hearing in out there in my neck of the woods is the down payment assistance, if it's 10%, 15% down, a lot of family, even though they have two working from the household, husband and wife, it's kind of like what it is across the United States. It's that savings. A lot of people don't save, so to come up with that 10-15% down is probably going to be an issue I'll be dealing with in the future. Tax credits, you know, we deal a lot with tax credits. We just did a groundbreaking for Tax Credit 8. It's dormitories for our college. We're hoping with those 20 to 30 units, that we'll free up some housing units downtown. We need to be creative. We need to look at some of these old rules and regs that HUD has, the tribe has, some of these old laws, and update those. So we're in the process of doing that currently. But, you know, if I guess I wasn't really prepared for the housing. I thought my director was going to be here. That's pretty much what we're doing. I mean, if there's any questions, you know, I'll be glad to answer if I can.
Chairman Trottier.
Thank you, and Chairman McLeod. I suppose no one qualifies for the USD rural housing projects, do they, because of the sovereign nation thing, and they cannot take a mortgage on it, eh? I know with that program, there is nothing, you need nothing down other than, when I worked at the bank as a loan officer, credit history and your credit report was very vital, but and it was hard for a lot of people that I dealt with, but I don't suppose they qualify, because I don't suppose they can get a mortgage, eh?
Well, not necessarily true, I would say, because we have a lot of tax lands within the boundaries of the reservation, so.
Okay.
So, it wouldn't be any different, I guess, with my home, even though it's not a USDA, it was a bank.
Okay.
Type package, and my home is on tax land, so.
Have anybody looked into the USDA rural housing program?
I'm sure my director has. I'll bring it back up to his attention.
Very, very loose, you know, for requirements. I know they don't require any down payment for within a certain region of your financial situation and your income. So, but that's a good program.
Thank you.
Mr. Sandberg?
Chairman, members of the committee, I'm sorry, we're all done with the promo. No problem, okay. The USD Rural Housing Plan, or program, if I'm not mistaken, you are right that it applies to fee properties. What we have down on Standing Rock, the populated areas are primarily trust, and what fee properties are available are usually agriculture. They don't come for sale often. So some of the things are going on down on Standing Rock. I guess we're taking a similar approach to Turtle Mountain and trying to establish a private housing market. Right now we have just over 900 housing units that are managed, I guess, and maintained by the Standing Rock Housing Authority, which is, there's guidelines and restrictions as to who can live in these homes, or even tax credit homes are the same. So what we see is a lot of our members who work on the reservation, they actually live here in Bismarck, Manda, and they have to commute every day, and they would love to have their own home, but the whole fee versus trust situation and getting permanent housing on those pieces of land is a huge barrier. But it is possible. So what we're doing now is we're actually working with Turtle Mountain State Bank. Turtle Mountain State Bank is actually building permanent housing structures on trust land, which is very unique. So we're actually working with them to get a branch set up down on Standing Rock. And I guess our big idea is, you know, we have a population that can own to own homes. They can build their own homes without no restrictions, without whatever. And what we hope to see happen is exactly what Chairman McLeod is saying, is that we'll start seeing a lot of families leave those housing units to become homeowners. And we'll also see a lot of our members who have left the reservation, like this guy, maybe come back to the community and contribute back that way as well. But I guess our big push right now, what we're trying to get accomplished in this term, is to establish a structure, a legal structure, that's going to be in code, it's going to be a law, to create security for investors, whether it's housing, whether it's business, whatever it may be. But as Chairman McLeod had said as well, we would love to work with the state on resources for down payment assistance, or even secured, like with Turtle Mountain State Bank, there's a legal lending limit that they have. So if the state can secure some of those dollars for specifically housing, it's not going to be nothing that's just given out. It'd be something obviously that has to be paid back, but it would free them up a little bit more to do more. So just want to make those comments.
Any other comments on housing?
Representative Nelson.
I guess I was going to ask the tribal members if any of the low-income housing programs work at all for tribes to work with, you know, that we're trying to, you know, get a low-income housing in the state, but usually it's some nonprofit corporation or something that does it, but I didn't know if tribes can really access or use those programs at all. So.
Chairperson Pearson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my issues are the same as the others. We have a housing shortage, and I know at this time we received a grant, as you probably heard in the mail, that, you know, for $900,000, but that's not going to go very far either. And right now, they are talking of renovating and, you know, kind of fixing up some of the other houses that haven't had any facelifts in a few years. And I'm not prepared to really speak on what all we have right now, but I want to assure you I'll bring something back to the next meeting. But housing is one of our priorities. And, you know, there's overcrowding. We have a lot of the mold issues, and that has to do with not using the vents and not, you know, doing proper maintenance on them too. But at the same time, we also have that high water table. And so a lot of the houses that had to be moved, you know, accumulated that mold. And I would just tear those down and burn them. Because they're not, you know, they're not worth fixing up. You're going to spend more money fixing them up than anything else. And I would rather just see new housing come up in the area. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak. And again, I'll come back prepared next time. Thank you.
Any other comments, Cody? Representative Trotter.
I apologize. Mr. Davis brought up, I believe, at the last meeting, something about, can you sell land, say you were to sell four square blocks of land, can you sell that to a tribal members for investments or for building housing on that would belong to that group or those people?
The land originating as trust or fee?
Whatever.
That's a huge difference there.
Whatever you want it to be.
It's a unique situation. I think if you're speaking in terms of if it's trust land, that's still a big barrier for lending institutions, as they can't ever take possession of that land. If it's on fee, that's what Mr. Davis has alluded to earlier, is that it streamlines it much quicker. And he uses the the building of the Family Dollar down in 48 as an example, which is a really good example. Business came in within just a few months, they're up and moving, fully functional, and providing a service to the community, where if somebody tried to do it on trust land, they're probably looking a year and a half, 2 years out before they, you know, they have to jump through all the hoops, and I think it's a 39-step process. So how do we address that problem is what we're trying to figure out, and I think we have a plan for it. So,
any other comments on housing?
Not why we're getting toward the bottom of the calendar here. And we're ready for motion. Okay. Representative Trottier, did you have a motion?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I have it written down here in just 1 second here. Mr. Chairman, I move that the chairman and the staff of the Legislative Council be requested to prepare a report on the bill drafts recommended by the committee, and to present this report and recommended bill drafts to the legislative management.
You have a second?
Voice vote?
Yeah. Voice vote for all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Mr. Chairman, I also move that the committee be adjourned. Sine die.
Motions are made. Second. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Is that it's been an honor for me to be able to chair this committee with you folks and get to know the folks that made in attendance, and apologize for blundering a few of the names and positions. But
that's good.
You're still a member when you go home. You're still Mr. Sitting Bear. I thank the council for all the help they've done for this committee, and Mr. Davis for his contribution to bring all the testifiers and stuff together and the subjects that we felt important to be discussed at this committee, and thank you for the members that serve on this committee. It's been a pleasure to be working with you folks, so thank you.
Thank you.